Welcome to the Beyond Affairs podcast. We are affair recovery specialists Anne and Brian Burcht. For the past 20 plus years, we have dedicated our lives to helping couples and individuals just like you heal from marital betrayal. In addition to private intensives, we run weekend intensive experiences for groups, including Healing from Affairs, Take Your Life Back, and Man of Honor. We're also the authors of the book, My Husband's Affair Became the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. While we're Christians and all our materials are biblically based, you'll feel comfortable and get help no matter what you believe. Our website is beyondaffairs.com. And now, here's your host, Anne Burcht. I'm going to do a little bit of an introduction because I am somewhat amazed at how far I go back with Mike and Kim. But my first introduction to Kim was when this very crying, distraught woman called our office. And that was not an unusual thing. And I believe that was back in 2007. And she kept asking me if we kept confidences. And I kept assuring her that there is no way that we would be in business if we did not keep people's confidences. And, you know, so I kept reassuring her. And this went back and forth a few times when she finally revealed the reason why she was so concerned about this thing about keeping confidences. And she said, well, my mom is one of your best friends. Oh, now I get it. And so that was a challenge for me for a period of time because Kim's mom was a close friend of mine. And I was afraid that Kim's mom would feel betrayed along the lines of, you knew that my daughter was going through this hard time and you didn't even tell me. But of course, Kim had contacted me in a professional capacity. And so that's one compartment and personal life is another compartment and they don't cross. And as I worked with Kim, who is the one that acted unfaithfully in this marriage, I knew that I needed to talk to Mike and he can share a little bit about that, but he didn't want to get on the phone with me at first, but eventually he did. And I'll stop with that introduction. And I don't know if there's anything else you want to say in opening, Brian.
We'll start there. I mean, apart from the fact, maybe what I would say is, 2007, I can hardly remember that far back. Golly. We were both coming out of diapers then. So anyway, that's a long time ago. It's hard to imagine. Other than the fact that I would say that both Mike and Kim really, they're really a kind of a testament to the amazing capacity people can recover and their commitment to their relationship and themselves and their family really kind of then it just spilled out into helping the couples that we had a chance to work with, and I can't thank them enough for their friendship and support, or you know, to what we do, and I just think of them, I'm proud of them for all they've done in their lives, and for the example that they are in their community that they live in. So it's not uncommon for us to hear of the effect that they've had for the people, you know, that we've never met. So I just can't thank them enough for being willing to jump on the call with us tonight. And for those that'll be maybe listening later on, I'll just say you guys missed a really, really great thing because you can't interact with them as we can tonight. So, that's all I'll say at the moment.
I will add this part that I think is worth saying is that Kim and Mike have probably assisted us coaching at more of our Healing from Affairs live seminars than any other couple Kim, you were keeping a list at some point, and I think we were well over 20. Do you know the exact number?
Yeah. Well, we're between Man of Honor and that, we're close to 35 or something. So, yeah, there's some beautiful experiences over the times.
Yeah, so 35 couples and or 35 seminars, and so many people that you guys have helped over the years, so much learning that you've done, so much wisdom that you guys have to offer. So I'm excited to have you guys sharing tonight. So let's go back to the beginning and share your story.
Yeah, you better go. My memory's good, but not that good.
This is, you know, thank you both for that introduction. You know, in a way, when you see us laughing and smiling, and for anybody that checks in here, this is, like Brian said, a testament to healing. And so we will be coming to you with almost 2 decades of healing behind us. And so it's different than when you're fresh out of it. But the really cool thing about meeting us, I guess, is that we are almost 20 years out of this, and you can be too in 20 years. So the emotions are different, and you will probably notice that with us, because we have a lot of joy and love and respect for each other. And we're just grateful for the journey that we've been on with Anne and Brian, because you don't go through 30 plus seminars and stay the same person you were at the beginning. And we continue to practice the tools. So that will be a part of the story. And we just really encourage anybody who's listening and those who are here with us now to continue to press into the work, into the tools that they're offering you to learn and practice, because that is the only way that we heal our marriage, that with a lot of grace. So, thanks, Brian and Anne, for having us on today. It's been a while. It's great. So, yeah. I'll give you the background on the timeline, I think, which helps to give context to our story. So we had just moved to Vancouver Island from up north, BC, and left behind all the family, the community, the network of friends and church and work. And we came down not knowing anybody and brought 2 little children with us, a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, and landed in a community where we knew nobody. And it was very isolating as a young mom, and eventually realized that it was very expensive to live here. As the California of Canada, it was very expensive to live here, and I had to go back to work. And so Mike and I, we were literally 2 ships passing in the night. I would work in the evenings waitressing, and we'd hired somebody to come and watch the kids for that sort of 1 to 2 hour turnover time between him getting home and me leaving. And we survived like this, not knowing then what we know now, just a little bit of a what do you call that when you give away a secret? But, we didn't know then that I had a lot of vulnerabilities, and I was in a place where I was very lonely. I was feeling very unsupported. We were under a lot of financial pressure, and Mike and I weren't connecting or seeing each other. And the marriage wasn't bad. It just was lonely. And what I didn't know then, and it took me many, many, many years, even after initially going to the seminar and using the tools, what I discovered years later was that a love language of mine, a deep need, a core need of mine, was conversation. It's how I feel loved, and it's how I feel connected to Mike. And of course, we weren't seeing each other really all that much. And instead, I was at work in a very social atmosphere and just sitting down on my breaks with one of the guys and chatting. And eventually it was like, oh, you know, tell me about your kids. Tell me about this. Tell me about that. And it was very subtle, a very subtle experience. And I was very naive and unaware and, you know, just kind of didn't think that I was in any sort of danger zone. I literally did not think anybody would be interested in me. So there's that naivety. And slowly started to bump up against the moral boundary and what mine was. Not, you know, it didn't seem like I was sitting down having coffee or meals with with a guy in a way that was inappropriate, but yet we were connecting on a level eventually that was meeting my need for conversation, and the affair began. And it was a process of about a year. We don't really actually have the dates because when I ended it, I actually kept it a secret from Mike for 5 years. I was terrified of losing him. I was terrified of losing our children or breaking up the family or whatever that would look like. And I did. I kept it a secret from him. So I actually learned and discovered that in hindsight, what I did was I took away his autonomy and his ability to make a choice to leave me, to do what he needed to do at that time, whether it was to choose to stay or to go. So that brought on a different set of challenges 5 years later when I went to heal from the affair. So through a process of, I for 5 years lived with deep shame. I had a record that played in my head of, I hate myself, I hate myself. And this record and this voice, the soundtrack was so entrenched in me that I remember clearly standing at the sink washing a pan and looking out the window. And as I was like washing the pan, in time with washing it, I was just going out loud. I was verbalizing, I hate myself, I hate myself. And it had become such a part of me that I was now in mindless moments speaking that out loud and speaking that death really over me. And I loved Mike and I loved my children, and I lived in this pretty dark space. So our story is one that comes from a place of faith background. And so it can't be separated from this because we had ended up going to a youth seminar. Actually, Mike was volunteering there as a sound guy and running the sound for these 300 to 400 youth that were there. And we were, aside from the leaders, we were the only adults. And they had brought in a guest speaker from Georgia, Atlanta. And he was really interesting. And we sat in with the kids to listen to him. We were the only adults in this whole sea of teenagers. And he got up there and he looked at us and he's like, and he looked at another couple and he's like, would you please stand? And we're like, okay, you know. And he spoke over the other couple and it was, you know, it was great. It was encouraging. And then he started speaking to Mike and I. And remember, Mike knows nothing and nobody knows anything. I was a vault because I was so scared of losing everything. So instead, when he asked us to stand, he started speaking over us and said, he looked at Mike and he says, you know, when I see you, I see a man of strength. I see strength. And he looked at me and he said, I see passion when I see you. And he said, you guys are going to go on to be mentors and be mentored. And I'll pause there for a second, because leading up to this point in time, I used to sit down with Mike with a book of pictures of people that attended our church and say things like, who do you think could be our mentors? We need mentors. Who could be our mentors? So here he is from Georgia telling us that we are going to find mentors and be mentors. And we're like, what? Like, what does this look like? And so he went on and he just spoke a lot of life over us. And then at the very end, he says, but first you're going to have troubles in your marriage. You want to take over there?
I guess, yeah, I sure can. Yeah, yeah. Well, so needless to say, Kim felt compelled to then share her story with me.
Actually, I will take over. Because I remember now where that's going. Yeah. You should first tell about what you said to the speaker, though.
Well, I went up to him after and I said, I think after he was all done, I went up to him and I asked him, I said, what do you mean? I said, I think my wife and I have like the best relation. Our relation's really good right now. It's probably the best it's been in a long time. And he's like, no, sorry, that's just what God told me. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, he didn't back down, but I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And then I asked him, you know, did he know what he's talking about? And she's like, no, I don't know anything. So I was like, okay, well, let's just see what happens. We'll play this out.
So when he had said that, this tremendous amount of fear and shame overwhelmed me that I did lie to Mike and say that. And it was a very scary feeling because I had been for years looking for opportunities to tell him, and I just couldn't find a way that felt safe to do that. And so we were at home about 2 weeks later, and we were in bed, and Mike, being Mike, said, he goes, you know, I've been praying for something where I have to be completely dependent on God. He's like, I feel like I don't have anything to offer in the church and whatnot, that nothing that's significant or that is within my gifts or passions. And I kind of was like, oh, what do you mean? You know, like, you're great and blah, blah, blah. And when he said that our marriage was good, it was good, because for 5 years I lived in shame and I did everything within my power to make that marriage great. It was at my expense, because he had no idea that I needed a connection with him that I wasn't asking for, because I didn't feel like I was entitled to ask for anything because I had done this thing. So as he's sharing that he would like to do something for God and he doesn't know what, I was kind of like, I don't understand. Like, what do you mean? And he's like, you know, I want to be totally dependent on God. You know, like, so like maybe if I had cancer or something. And I was horrified. And I'm like, you're praying for cancer? And he's like, no, that's not what I'm saying. And he says, I just wish there was something that it wasn't, that I had something that I didn't have any control over, and I had to trust God to take me through it. And well, I'm sitting there like there is a wheelbarrow full of bricks on my chest. Like, I knew there was no getting.
And I haven't prayed that since.
No, can I? Can I just pause for a moment, because wasn't there also an element? I remember that when I was writing our book, My Husband's Affair Became the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me, I looked for about 10 test readers to read the original manuscript and give me feedback. And your mom, being my friend, was one of them. And she, before the book was even published, was so excited about it. She shared that she had then shared it with you at a camping trip, with having no idea that you yourself had gone through this. So I don't know.
That is exactly what happened. We were camping, and I was, at that time, I was trying to fully get out of, that was how early in it was. I was trying to fully get out of the affair. And whether it was just my emotional connection at that point, like there was maybe, I don't remember if there was contact at that point, but I was trying to, and so I was reading Anne's book, like, help me, you know? And so my mom's reading it to me, because I'm an excellent proofreader. And she's like, read my friend's book. And I was like, oh, I don't want to read this book. And then I read this book. And so what I did at that time was I kept to memory things that Anne had said about what Brian needed to do for her in order for her to heal. I didn't want to make mistakes. And she talked throughout the book of mistakes that they had made in their journey and sort of the really winding road that they took to healing. And I kind of had an inner sense that there wasn't going to be any room for me to make mistakes with Mike. He was going to be gone. And so when that night came, I got on my knees and I literally bowed my face down into the mattress of the bed. And I said to him, what if it's not a sickness or something about you? What if it's somebody else that does something to you? And he's like, nobody can hurt me. You're the only person. And I said, 5 years ago, I had an affair.
And then What was, do you remember that night? I'm sure you do.
Oh yeah, 100%. I thought you know, Kim, when I married, she never smoked, never swore, never drank. So I was like,
pastor's kid.
I didn't even understand like what was going on. I didn't understand. Like, I thought that it was like not real, but then I could tell that she was like pretty upset about it. And I'm like, apparently this is real. Like, I couldn't comprehend or really fully grasp it at first. So, you know, it took a couple of days, and
he went downstairs, and I remember hearing, we had at the bottom of the stairs a little tiny bathroom, like I'd say a really tiny bathroom. He was probably too big for that bathroom. And I heard a big crashing noise, and it was him falling to the ground in that bathroom, crying and sobbing. And that was that first night. It was hell. And that I would say it was the beginning of our trip to hell and back, because I didn't realize how hard it was going to be. And it really was by the grace of God that I had the tools and that I was far enough. I mean, now in hindsight, I never recommend to anybody keeping that a secret. But in hindsight, it allowed me just to be a lot emotionally detached so that I could be fully present with Mike for the healing and capable of not reacting to his anger and hurtful sort of expressions towards me. Because what I didn't realize at the time was he was looking for any mistake by me so that he could justify leaving me. And he just wasn't we didn't have the tools
at that time, though. I didn't realize, but I was also like, I left home when I was 15 or 14 years old. My mom died, and then my dad got remarried 6 months later, and then I had to listen to her or get out, and so they kicked me out. And so I feel that part of it was I didn't really let anybody in. You know, Kim was probably the first person I let into my life that I could like maybe trust and love. And then she betrayed me as well. So I think that was another aspect of what was going on with me as well. And so
a layer of
I was just, I was just devastated. And lots of other things could have happened. But yeah, I tried going to a counselor, but it didn't work out. I first went to a pastor, and then he's like, just didn't really say much and just prayed for me and said, here, we'll get you a counselor. And then we went to the counselor and he sat there and blamed Kim. And I'm like, well, this isn't going to work either. I knew that. Because at first, like, I still loved her, but, you know, at first we're trying to make it all work out, trying to make sense of everything for the first couple months and trying to figure it all out. Then as time passes, I just don't understand what she's saying to me. I'm like, you say these things, like you say that you love me, yet you did this, and ask her these questions, and then
asking me why.
The questions don't make any sense to me. You know, what she's saying is not computing. It's just like, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but it's still like there's something else. I'm missing something completely. And
so I phoned Anne because I asked Mike. I obviously had read the book by this point, and I knew about Anne, and terrified that she would tell my parents, because a little bit of background on that is that when I told Mike, and then he was finally, I think, the next day ready to speak, one of the things that he told me is, if you tell anybody about this, I will divorce you. And he said, you have family that will support you. He said, I have nobody. And he goes, I don't want you having support that I don't have access to.
Yeah. I didn't want her to be supportive, since she's the one that caused all this pain in the first place. I was like, this is not fair for you to do this to me and then have support. And I was like, forget that. If I have to go through this pain, then you're going through it with me.
We didn't. The only thing
maybe that unhealthy, but that's the way we went.
Yeah, it wasn't healthy, but that's the way we went. And we did tell our best friends, we're going through something. Please have patience with us. We can't tell you what it is. And they did for years and years. They just didn't ask us and they didn't desert us. So that was really cool. But at the point that nothing was working, we found ourselves about almost 2 years out with Mike being triggered less frequently. We had a functioning relationship. And
well, we went through a long period of time of just like, you know, just a, you know, I'd be just driving down the road and have to pull over on the side of the street because I just can't breathe, you know, or I just all these thoughts going in my head. And I was just like trying to convince myself that she does love me, or is she just staying with me because, you know, because of the kids, or it makes her look bad if she, you know, all these things. And I'm like, you know, one of the biggest battles was in my head of like, which voice to listen to, you know, what do you really want? You know, and I was like, well, if she doesn't love you, then why is she trying so hard to love you? So I kind of kept that in my mind of like, you know, trying to hold on to these things that, yeah, she does love you, because if she didn't, she would not be here right now, you know, and or, you know, she wouldn't be trying to make things better. And so, you know, I had to keep telling myself that. And then we spent a lot of time asking a lot of questions over and over again, and a few extra times, and
that was fun.
Some more times, but usually it's safe till late at night. So
yeah, really late.
Wasn't it a couple of years from the time of disclosure until you actually contacted me?
It was. Yeah. So I did reach out to Anne, and Mike was not going to have anything to do with it. but or you, he was willing to talk to Anne. That's what it was. He was willing to talk to Anne.
Well, I was like, Kim's like, well, because it was probably like we built the house. I kind of went during this time of us trying to heal. I was building our home. So I just kind of would go over there after work and work on it. And so I never kind of, it was my way of escaping and kind of getting my own sanity and being able to do something. And after the house was built and we kind of had moved in there, I'm just like, you know what? I don't think this is working anymore, because we've kind of gone through everything and we've kind of, you know, you've tried the best you can. She's done all the right things. She told me like all the truth right up front, told me everything, you know. She didn't like minimize stuff, some stuff, but not purposely. And, you know, just, we didn't understand a lot of things. There's too many questions that weren't answered. And I'm like, you know what? I can't, I can't just be like walking down the street and then all of a sudden just feel like my chest and my, is going to rip apart, you know, and I can't breathe. And I'm like, what? I can't live like this. Like, I know that you love me and you care for me and I love the kids and the family, but I'm like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. It's been like a year. I think it was about 13, 14 months at that time, 15 months.
So you talked to Anne?
So, well, then you said, well, what about Anne? So you're like, okay, I guess we'll try it out. And then, yeah. So then I talked to Anne and she's like, do you want to stay? And I'm like, yeah. You know, I said, well, you know, we have kids and this and that. And I remember her saying that, you know, like, yeah, but do you want to stay? Like, regardless of the kids, you know, the kids can kind of bounce back, you know, like, do you want to stay for, and try to make this work out with Kim? And I'm like, yeah, I will. I'll give it a shot. And then there was a conference that was starting. Like,
she asked if you want to speak to Brian.
Well, I didn't want to speak to Brian because he's the bad guy.
Not exactly how you said it the first time, but, yeah. But you're very, very, you're very kind now.
This is laughter now because of the friendship that's developed over the years, that it's kind of funny to think back that you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, in literally a week and a half, Anne and Brian had a seminar going down in Dallas, or happening in Dallas. And at that point, I had zero options but to tell my parents what I had done, because I needed them to come to the island and watch the kids for us when we flew down. And
the chances of them not being suspicious when you were coincidentally going to a conference in Dallas at the exact same time when we were doing a conference in Dallas.
Yeah. So we did, and it just absolutely devastated my parents. They were incredibly shocked. My mom was just, she couldn't believe it. And but you know what was really cool about that was that my mom is a prayer warrior, and she spent that weekend praying for that entire seminar, like every moment that she had. And she just
I went and picked her mom up. I said, I'll pick your mom up from the ferry. So I went and picked her up from the ferry and drove her back to our house. And she was telling me how amazing Anne and Brian are and their seminars and how much they help people. I'm like, well, they better be good, because if it doesn't work out, I'm leaving her. I'm leaving Kim. I can't handle it anymore.
My poor mother.
So, yeah, I was pretty straightforward and blunt with my...
Yeah. So we flew down there, went to the seminar, and at that time, you know, we were a lot further out than a lot of people. Well, I was way further out than a lot of people.
By time.
Yeah. I wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So we were out by almost 2 years of disclosure, right. A year and a half, I think it was, of disclosure. And, but I was out then like 6.5 years of the affair. So I didn't have that. I didn't have to go through the emotional withdrawal I didn't have any emotional connection with the affair partner at that point. So that was quite different than a lot of the people all the people that were there that were like fresh out of it. Some of them were still in the affair and trying to end it or deciding if they were going to or not. And it was a really interesting position to be in, because at that point, you don't know at the beginning if you're the person, if the woman had the affair, if the man had the affair, and all those women who've been betrayed pretty much think that every woman that's there has been betrayed, and they're all angry and they're going off. And so I'm in the bathroom with all these women and they're just like going off about how awful their husbands are. And then they say something and I'm like, well, actually, I had the affair. And then, I'll, you know, silence. And then they're like, oh, but you're so nice. And I'm like, yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. You know, like the pain is still the pain. And what was magic, I call this magic, but it was amazing, was being in that room with all of these couples who, it didn't matter what side you were on, whether it was the woman who had the affair or the man who had the affair, or it was the woman who was betrayed or the man that was betrayed, they were all asking and answering, sharing their stories. So if you were listening to somebody who had been unfaithful and they were trying to explain why or how it happened or what the process was, it was validating what I had been trying to explain to Mike for a year and a half. It wasn't exactly the same, but the process was the same. And for the first time, he's hearing this and he's like, okay, I can't be listening to all of these people saying the same thing and lying. He's like, maybe she is telling the truth about this part of it. And that would be maybe a question that he was stuck on, like on the why or the how. Oh, or
it was for sure a question I'm stuck on. I was like, I don't know how this can happen. Like it just happens. Like, it was, made no sense to me. So, hearing everybody else in Mitoli was great because now it took it away from Kim and being actually, this is a process that a lot of people go through. And it's a lot of commonalities that other couples have that make you realize that, okay, it's not Kim just out to get me or out to hurt me, mm-hmm. that this is just a process of which most people go through. So.
And listening to Brian's session on how it happened, you know, was with a visual, was very helpful because it was a way to explain my, I could easily put my details and timeline into his explanation and be like, well, so using that, this is what it was like for me. And it gave us a language that we both understood, that we both were on the same page to be able to then use that as the starting point for these conversations. So what we ended up doing was making it through the seminar and, you know, just being, so it was so good. And we had our workbooks when we got back. And so we committed to redoing the workbooks because you can't get through the workbook in a seminar. There's just too much goodness in them. And so we committed to once a week doing a unit in the workbook again and going through it, the entire thing, and asking the questions again, but from a new lens, with a new vocabulary, with a new
process,
with a new way of communicating, because we had learned how to talk to each other and how to listen to each other. And for us, okay, for me, I won't speak for you, but for me, the session that impacted me the most was, one of the sessions that impacted me the most was the personality style. When we did our personality tests before going down there, Mike took it and it was so ridiculously on point. It was amazing. I was just like, wow, like that's totally him. I took it.
Side note, it's not obvious that one of you is naturally very verbal and the other one's naturally nonverbal.
I don't know.
Well, anyways, when I took the test, though, it didn't resonate with me. And I mean, it kind of did, but not the way that Mike's, when we read his, just was like resonated. And one of the things that had been a point of contention for us in our prior to the seminar healing was that Mike would accuse me of not knowing myself. And that's why I couldn't answer some of the questions. And he was scared that if I didn't know myself, how would I know to not end up in that situation again? And so now we're taking this personality test and it's like spot on for Mike and it doesn't resonate with me. So my parents by now know what's going on and they had actually been a part of Anne and Brian's other seminar, the one just for marriages in general. The love and passion. And so they were familiar with the personality tests that they use. And so they would try to take it for me, you know, because they know me well. And again, they come up with something different, but it wasn't me. So by the time we got to the seminar in Dallas, I was pretty distraught, actually, because I thought maybe Mike was right, that I didn't know myself and I was broken. And I remember kind of yelling at the computer, saying that even the personality test can't figure me out. And it was really heartbreaking, actually. It was wounding. And because it just made me feel broken on top of already broken. And so we get there, and she just gave me the book of all the styles. And she said, just read this. Just find the one that resonates the most with you. And so I, being me, took the book and I read them, and I found the one that was so me, and read it to Mike, and it really resonated with him. And so, yes, he's the two nonverbal traits. Yes, I'm the two verbal traits dimension. But in that, for the first time in a very long time, I thought, I might be okay. I'm not broken. I'm not completely broken. And so it was a step for my own inner healing that I needed to be able to feel like that there was hope, that in understanding myself, that I wouldn't end up there again. And now this is a new discovery. Actually, I haven't shared this with Ann and Brian yet. Growth is a never-ending discovery and process. And one of the new works that I've been diving into is the Enneagram work. And I've discovered that I'm an Enneagram 1. And with an Enneagram 1, and I'm a solid Enneagram 1. And the deep core motivator of needing to be good and right and perfect now makes sense to me, that I was so terrified of screwing up again, of being a failure again, of having failed, that shame was tripled, in my opinion, through that lens. And that I was so broken because I had failed in this grand, I had this grand moral failure that could never be redeemed. And that was what I truly believed, is I was unredeemable. And learning that now makes it just a little bit less scary for me moving, not that I'm scared moving forward, but just thinking like, hey, this was my lens. This is my lens. This is my motivator. And it's why I felt, it's a part of the reason why I felt so much shame compared to maybe some other people who have a different style. They feel shame, but they process it differently. For me, I processed it to the core of my being, and I allowed it to identify myself. And for a very long time.
Yeah, at one point we moved on and we kind of healed our marriage and we're moving on. And I'm like, I have forgiven you. Mm-hmm. And you haven't forgiven yourself, and our marriage is not moving forward because you need to forgive yourself and kind of like, come through that healing, that part of healing. And it's important for her, in order for us to have a full relationship, we both have to be whole people. So.
And so the night after the last night of the seminar, and called us up to her, invited us back to her room, and she was checking in with us, and we were sharing our experience. And one of the things that she said, because it came out where it's like, I just wish that there was somebody here where the woman had the affair. And these are the reasons why. And she sort of looked at me like, and she's like, would you guys be that? Would you come on board and help us with that? And I remember at that moment in time, my perfectionism, and I was just also exhausted. And I was just like, no, not right now. Like, we need to make sure that we are solid. But check in with us. We would like to maybe in time, you know? And so there was a time, maybe a year and a half, 2 years after, well, I don't even know how long it was, but there was a time after that where we started with Ann and Brian very slowly and joining, coming alongside of them. And it was a gift because we stayed in that place when we needed it for a lot longer of just checking in about our marriage and using the tools and being around mentors who were watching out for us and meeting other people who were going through this journey, being mentors to them, but also becoming friends with people that we met along the way, that we have maintained these friendships now to this day. And there is nothing more amazing, I would say, than the feeling that we have. We've never found a community like this, because when you have overcome something so traumatic in your relationship, and there's forgiveness and there's true healing and forgiveness and acceptance and grace, and you know that there's other people that have walked that journey, nobody gets it. There's nobody Our best friends don't get it. Our family, they get it, but they don't get it. But to be in a room full of you people, the joy that that brings, because we are all overcomers, and we've done the hard work, and what we have is so beautiful. It's so different than if we had never gone through what we went through.
Yeah, so much deeper. Sure.
So we never give any credit to the affair, but as I often say, because that is our experience, and it's the experience of couples that we work with when we stay in touch, and but the level of maturity and personal growth and honesty that has to happen in order to get through this, you know, end up on the other side where you don't, you know, it's like to be fully known, but also fully loved and accepted. And now you're not performing anymore. You can just be yourself, and the love that you give to your spouse, you're giving not because you feel like you might get betrayed if, you know, you don't give it, but you're giving it because you love them and you feel so safe and secure in the relationship. And then there's an energy. It's like, I remember, and you guys were probably there once, we took, I think there was about 20 of us that went to a Smart Marriages conference that were all part of our team and our mentors and our coaches. And so we were taking up two of those banquet round tables they put in big hotel banquet rooms where you have your big plenary speaker. And these therapists, like the whole tone of the room, because it's therapists, it's educators and authors, generally speaking, they're kind of quiet, serious people. And then there was our two tables, which were not quiet and serious. There was just like energy and honesty and fun and storytelling, because everybody's healed. And the rest of the room started whispering, like, who are those people over there who are having so much fun at their tables? And it's like, oh, it's the affair recovery specialists. And it's opposite, but it speaks to, and I'm sharing that to say that is the hope that is there for every couple. You know, you dig into the tools like you guys did. You take the workbook and what we share with you, and you go chapter by chapter, because it's time plus doing the right things. You can't, you know, be in completely broken and then 3 days later be like, oh, we're good, like we can shove it. You have to now process with the tools, the things that you've learned. There's that time of mending the broken heart and the understanding that comes. But that can be done in, you know, I mean, I think if you dig in, and I don't know what your experience is, I mean, one has to be cautious with timelines, because we can put too much stock in them, and there has to be room for every couple to be unique. But I always say, if you dig in for about 4 months into the really hard stuff, and then usually there's a period of months or a year or so with the lingering sadness to get to that real true forgiveness and letting go.
I think, yeah. If I was to add to that, because that's so true, there's a piece though that I needed to contribute above and beyond what Mike needed to contribute. And that was that I had to be willing and meek and strong, all of those things, all those contradictory things, to be able to press into the hard conversations and allow him to process them. I had to stay engaged in a way that's not natural. When feeling pain, you want to retreat, and it doesn't feel pleasant when he's working through his pain and asking me questions. And I really needed to learn and really needed to learn to take deep breaths and stay engaged. And I'm not talking unsafe situations. There's a lot of danger zones that can happen in healing from affairs, particularly when women have been the one that has been unfaithful. The men traditionally kind of holds a little bit more physiological power, I would say, than a woman. He's got a deeper, scarier voice, who tends to be bigger and can come across as more demanding or authoritarian or angry or any of those things. And we have seen in our work that a line can get crossed sometimes into an abusive situation. That was not our story. Mike was never, as angry as he was, he did not even come close to that line of either verbally abusing me, physically abusing me, anything. But yet, even in that, it was scary because it was not him. He was hurt. And I had to take a breath and stay present with him.
Yeah. So, Kim, let me just ask you this question around that, because I glad you kind of led into that, because I had the question I wanted to ask is, and this is more directed towards you, Kim, but then I'm sure, Mike, this also could be applicable to you. So when that conversation, like, so 5 years of sort of hiding it, kind of 2 years of sort of fighting it out, it's still not there. So this process for you then has been like 7 years in the journey, and now you come to the weekend and you get some new tools. Now it would have opened up all those questions again at some level. So what did you have to say to yourself to navigate your courage to kind of engage that conversation again without having to say, you know what, we've talked about this 600 times already, and like what did you do for yourself to kind of hang in there long enough to not be frustrated or discouraged? I mean, the frustration could have been there, but how did you hang in there long enough to not let your frustration or discouragement overwhelm you where you quit? Like, what'd you do?
Well, that's a really good question, because everything that you just said is exactly what it felt like. First thing was we went to Starbucks to have our conversations. that just provided a neutral environment that Mike is loud. He can get loud when he's angry, and he can just, as he's tense and he's like trying to control himself, I can see him trying to control himself, but then he's like getting angry because he's trying to control himself and he just wants to answer these questions or get these questions answered, you know? So that was the first thing for us, was taking it to a public place. And sitting at the table and going through the workbooks. That was the first thing. It wasn't always that way. So regardless of whether we were in a public place or in a private place, two things. The first was, I always had it in my mind that if he was asking the question, he needed the answer. And that he was the one that was in charge of the healing process. I did this to him, and in order for him to heal, he needed these answers. So I had to tell, just like Mike had to tell him a story, tell himself a story about how I loved him and that I must love him because I'm staying there going through all of this with him. I had to tell myself a story that he isn't doing this to be mean to me, even though it really felt like he was a bully. And that was something we had to work through later. And that was why the personality styles actually really helped us a lot there. And so coming and when Mike said, like, when we came back and we did this, I was actually able to see Mike in a new lens, because what I thought was him being mean or being a bully or steamrolling me, I was able to understand that through the lens of his personality, it wasn't at all. It's just that he needed the answer. He was being direct and he was going to get that answer. And I was able to depersonalize a lot of that. The second part was, and maybe Mike could, if you wanted to share a little bit about this, but the Imago
Yada conversation. Yeah.
The Yada conversation of mirroring each other's and then validating and showing empathy was a game changer, because we discovered, apparently, even though I can talk well, I don't listen well. And imagine that. And but also that Mike didn't listen well. And so we, like, when we say that we use the tools, people, we use the tools. We didn't pretend. We didn't have any room for more mistakes. This wasn't a game. We didn't, you know, put all that time and effort and energy into getting down to a seminar and going through the pain of sitting there through that seminar and hearing all those stories and getting those tools to not use them. Like, I can't fathom that, actually. And so that was critical in removing the emotion from our conversations so that we could hear each other's heart and words and not be flooded by the emotion of maybe the tone or the just that flooding that comes with that. So yeah, that would be the two major things. Was one was maybe three then, going to a public place, using the yada, and also recognizing and knowing each other and our personalities and being able to depersonalize what was going on.
Okay.
Well said. Well,
I'm going to add to that for a second, just because like one of the things that knowing Kim and how much she pressed in, and when I knew that she didn't want to answer the questions and she didn't want to be there too, because it just added more shame to her. And I wasn't trying to hurt her. I just needed to get I needed to understand. I wasn't understanding. And so, but knowing that she pushed through and was there present with me and willing to be there and answer the questions and the hard questions for me, it actually helped build credibility, her credibility with me, because I was like, she's willing to put up with this and she's willing to put in the hard work and think about it and put herself on the, you know, under the spotlight here to kind of like, you know, critique everything, you know. And so, you know, if she wasn't caring and loving and she's willing to put the hard work in, then, you know, then we both at the end realized how hard it was for both of us and how much effort both of us put in, that we had a lot of respect for each other as we went and healed.
Okay. I have one more question, if we got enough time there, Anna, I'm not quite sure.
Well, I just want to be sure that Jim and Nicole get a chance to ask a question, okay, since they've been listening and they're here live. So
I go get off there right after this question.
All right.
So for you then, Kim, because you lived through this, I mean, you said for 5 years you're kind of hanging on to this sense of shame and your identity was based on that you're a bad person. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of, and of course, I'm sure it wasn't like, didn't make it easier that Mike wasn't better after a couple of years of yakking about it, right? Mm-hmm. So how then, what did you do in for yourself to kind of help kind of find your true sense of value as a woman, as a wife? How did you kind of overcome that for yourself? Because without having to sort of, you know, kind of rely on Mike to tell you how you, right? I mean, because, you know, I know that it's good when he gets it, but when there's those moments when he's struggling, he's not like going, oh, wow, I'm really struggling. But, you know, you're a darn good wife, and I'm so proud of you. And, you know, like, I wasn't sure he was, well, he's a pretty mature guy, but maybe not right then.
Oh, it sounds like you've gone through this or something, Brian. there was no validating coming from Mike. That was a skill that definitely came later. I mean, it's really easy to look at us now and think, oh, wow, they just did it all right. Yeah, that's not true. We're just able to recognize the motivations behind what we did then and understand and have grace for each other. At the time, because we had circled the wagons and nobody knew what was going on, I had very little opportunities to be encouraged or feel support, or there was nobody praying for us. There was nothing. This is like prior to the seminar and before we told my parents. And so I think that in that time, I learned to recognize the things that I was doing right and tell myself I was doing it right and be like, okay, you told the truth there. Good job. You did something hard here. Good job. And I literally had to verbalize those things and say those things to myself, because I was on a solo journey and there was no validating coming from Mike at the worst of the times. And it wasn't like he was thanking me when I told him, you know, how many times I slept with the other person. That's not happening. And yet there's no acknowledgement of how hard that was for me to say that and how humiliating and how horrible to think that I would be telling my spouse something so awful. And yet if I wanted any chance at healing this marriage, I had to tell him the things that he needed to know. And Mike needed to know everything. And so it was, that was that part of that. Then me alone in the moment, feeling all that shame going, but this time you told the truth, Kim.
Okay, thank you.
So we've shared a lot, and we hope, I know that as far as I remember from the call that we did 2 hours ago, Jim and Nicole, you guys are fresh on your journey. And I don't even remember which one of you had the affair, but
I got the notes.
Oh, you
on January 29th. Okay. That's how fresh it is.
Mm-hmm. So you heard now in a course of almost an hour, a journey from, you know, broken to restored, and so that's a lot. But anyways, we open it up for what questions do you have for Mike and Kim? I'm sure they'd be happy to stay a few extra minutes. It's only not even 6 o'clock where they are.
It is outside. It's beautiful. We're good. You guys might be sound asleep, but we're fine.
Yeah.
No, because it is still fresh. It's we're stuck. We're stuck with getting the truth and getting to the truth, and that's where we're at. That seems to be the biggest issue. Myself, I can only speak. I'm probably a week and a half past the feeling shock and disbelief to the point where I'm, you know, not making any decisions. I've watched and read, and thank goodness for your information. I've read everything that I could read. Still no.
Yeah. And I think as it started, I didn't realize it was an affair. I truly didn't. We were friends and we talked, and we've been friends for 20 years, and that friendship just crossed boundaries, but I still didn't think it was an affair. Everything was just words. It wasn't physical. It was just words, and I didn't think words could hurt. Words actually hurt worse. You know, if it was a one-night stand or something, and do it, and it's over with. But this lasted for about a year. But it sort of morphed from a friendship into more.
Yeah.
And that's the part we're stuck at, because I believe there's half truths and so on. It's a long story, and I think this will take a turn.
Right.
And I'm afraid that's not the goal.
We're not yet.
But that's where we're stuck at.
So you guys are in Columbus, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. So if it's at all possible, you guys need to get to Cincinnati for March 25th to 27th.
Mm-hmm. Were you going to say something there?
Well, I was just going to say that one of the, it's a gift now, it wasn't a gift then, but that Kim was able to, you know, kind of like tell as much of the truth as she could to me, because the lies, it's so much easier to try to believe lies or not even believe the truth. They feel like lies. So, you know, the half truths and trying to minimize stuff is more hurtful than helpful. So as hard as it is to say the truth and to be there, it's important. It was very important to me to have that shared, and it was it helped the healing journey with us heal faster because of it too, because it wasn't like we had to wade through more lies.
I think that at the point that I disclosed to Mike, I realized this was the path that we were on and this is what it was going to be like. I kind of had this sense, I guess is the best way to put it, that If I was going to tell the truth and start this process, there was no way that I wasn't going to be all in with telling the truth. And I think one of the things that we say, Mike would say too, is that he couldn't be hurt any worse than he was when he found out, unless I'm minimizing the truth and then telling more lies on top of it. That's the only thing that could hurt him worse. Did he love asking me these really intimate, horrible details and finding out the answers? No, but it didn't actually hurt him the way that he was hurting when I first disclosed to him. And in fact, when I didn't know the answer to something, and that's a different story. We had a different experience because 5 years out was a long time to remember some details of timelines and stuff like that, but that hurt him. And so it was the absence of information or misinformation that is more hurtful than the truth, just the straight up truth. And I knew that I did not want to end up after that seminar, like for us, it was the seminar. And I was just like, I do not want to leave this seminar and have something I have to tell him. Now, fortunately, because I'd had that mindset for a year and a half prior where I was going to tell him everything that he asked, I was going to tell him the answer to, I did. What came out of the seminar was I now had an ability and a comprehension. I was able to, for the first time, comprehend how I got there. I was able to answer new questions or old questions that Mike had in a way that was truthful and made sense. And it wasn't that I was lying before.
No, you went a little deeper with your answers, I think, instead of just surface answers, because she didn't really know the true, maybe the emotion or the feeling behind it. And as we grew and healed together, it kind of came a little bit more clear, a lot of things.
By going to the seminar, Ann and Brian gave us a language. I don't know how else to explain it. And information and knowledge and a new way to look at something that gave me the ability to answer finally in a way that actually met both of our needs. It's not like I didn't want to answer those questions for Mike, but I would answer him. And then like one of the, for example, this one was the one that stands out in my memory is that he'd be like, well, why, how did this happen? He'd be drilling me out with, and I was like, I don't know. He talked to me. And Mike just blew his top. And he's like, so what? Every guy that talks to you, you're going to go sleep with? And I'm like, no. And I was like, I didn't know how to explain it. But what I didn't understand at the time was the emotional connection, right? And so I was able to revisit that question that for a year and a half had caused so much pain in our healing because I couldn't explain it well enough to him because I didn't know and I didn't understand it. And I was able to, after the seminar, sit down with Mike in a neutral space and say, I understand this now.
The difficulty we run into being stuck in the half-truths and truths is there's things that have been written that are denied, and there's things that have been said that are denied. The other part of this is she works with the guy every day, and they see each other every day. And it's really hard for me because I feel like there's many reasons, typically three or four good reasons, that the affair partner doesn't disclose everything. And one of which is to protect the other person.
And the affair person?
Yeah. I'm sorry. The other guy.
Yeah, the other guy.
And we do know their family. And they've taught together for 20 years. We've been to parties together and everything else. And his wife does that. And so there's a lot of complications here. This is still very fresh. And there's no easy way of...
there's no easy answer. We're not going to take your pain away tonight. But I do want to give you hope. And it might take a couple of one-on-ones to, like, dealing with this whole situation of that you still see him... work together. I think you said we can figure out something that deals with that. Okay. And as far as the truths, half truths, sometimes, like, again, a session or two, Brian and I can help you sort through that. And then once you sort through a bit of it, then we begin to make some progress. Like, one of the things that Brian and I do is we will work hard to it's kind of like, we're going to teach you how to fish. We're not going to fish for you. So we're going to give you skills so that, you know, we're not going to like coach every single conversation that you need to have. We're going to show you how to have the conversations. And so that, and, you know, to make the decisions that are right for you. So, yeah, should probably start with a, like where you're at. If you want to make more progress, we should probably have a one-on-one session either with Brian or with myself and, you know, go from there.
If I could say something to that, you know, one of the sad things I think in our healing journey is sometimes I wish that we'd gotten to a seminar sooner. And that's not to say, I mean, it worked so well for us to go later. Like, that's fine. There's benefits, there's pros and cons to both. But to have been able to go sooner, and just so you know, we don't work for Anne and Brian. We're not getting a commission off of this. We're just sharing my experience here about the seminar.
Even when they did work for us, we never paid them.
That's right. They were always a volunteer. Yeah.
But in terms of the seminar, like a lot of what I'm just hearing, just the little bit that I'm hearing from you, and I'm just like, oh, I wish you could be at a seminar. And it's not going to solve your problems, all your problems or anything like that. But I believe that, okay, so I know Jim, I got your name. What's your name?
Nicole.
Nicole. Thanks. I think like for Nicole, it is a safe place to really press in and understand the why it's so important to and how to share with you in a safe way that's safe for her, that whatever it is that maybe is holding her back or she feels like she's protecting. We can't just say, tell the truth and it'd be like magically, okay, we're going to tell the truth. Maybe that's the case, but there's some deep fears and some deep things that were going on in my life that held me back, not because I was trying to be mean or not be truthful. And like you said, there's multiple reasons why, but I needed to unpack those and learn those for myself before I could feel safe. And I think that's why when we sort of talk about the connection that we have with all of these other couples or with Anne and Brian is because the deep level of vulnerability, the place that we're able to get to, strips away fears and pride and brings us to a place of authenticity that couldn't be experienced in any other way, but we don't just magically get there. And so my throwing it out there, if there's a seminar like us, we went within a week and a half of hearing about it. If there's one that close that you could get to, I do highly recommend it.
But well, the one thing that I have done is I did start individual counseling because I think I need to heal myself. I think I need to figure out things about myself to help me understand it.
Good. Yeah, I think that's a really, really important piece. And in the meantime, being able to also have the tools to heal the two of you so that it's all, I want to be cautious when I say this, but I don't recommend this, but I really had to put my needs on hold for a long time to be able to be present with Mike so he could heal. And I think that what you're doing is really good work and to be continuing to do that. But at mm-hmm. the same time, you will need to find a way to also, if you guys want this to work, you will need to find a way to be present with Jim and help him heal. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we'll close it here. Mike and Kim, you guys are amazing. And I am just so proud of, you know, who you guys are and how far you come. And it is a precious memory as I remember that seminar there in Dallas. Brian actually got sick that seminar and made it through the end. That's why the three of us visited. And of course I was checking in on you. And so, so to see, you know, it wasn't like you were like, okay, we're all good. We finished the seminar. There was a journey that you got after that. So to see where you are today and, of course, you know, being also now friends, I know all about your trip to Iceland and to Europe last summer. And, you know, it's like I'm sure you probably feel like when you were going through it, like it seems like there is no hope. And here you guys are having such an amazing time today. And so we want to give that hope to you guys, Jim and Nicole, and to anyone else that listens to this recording. And we are here for you, Jim and Nicole, you know, to walk you through this. We're going to get you through this, okay? So
well, thank you for all the information that you have on your website, as well as the affiliates and the support groups and everything else you have available. Thank you tremendously. I'm sure you've heard it a million times, but I'll add one more thank you, because for me, I can just say that's made a tremendous amount of just helping me understand where I'm at, what's normal, that this is okay, that you're going to be okay, and no matter what. So thank you. That's all I'm trying to say.
You're welcome, and thanks for saying it. It does keep Brian and I encouraged and motivated in this big work that we do. So, all right, good night, everybody. Thank you for listening. This is Brian and Ann Birch signing out. We do seminars, coaching, and private intensives to help you. So we want to hear from you soon. We care about your story. And don't forget to check out our book, My Husband's Affair Became the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. Our phone number is 360-306-3367. And again, that website is beyondaffairs.com. All right, stay strong.